ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Sean Mapes behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Thought we were going to have a full show. Thought we were the Killer Bees. We're going to be back intact. I thought we were here. We were back. Joe George will be back shortly, but it's good to have you back, Blankers. How was vacation? Everything go good?
Great to be back. It's never good when you lose sleep on vacation instead of gaining it. Disneyland is the biggest cash grab on the planet, but the kids had fun, and I am happy to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. We missed you. I'm tired of talking to Joe every day for 3 hours. I like it better when he sits back in his little fishbowl. He can't really opine about things. And for punishment, for talking back all of last week, we sat him in a 30-minute timeout. So
essentially he didn't do the show.
He's, what's that?
With all the 30 minutes he sat out, did he actually miss shows?
No, he's going to sit out 30 minutes today.
Oh, got it.
He's going to sit out 30 minutes today. Joe also tried to do the what up, H-Town, hey, how we doing?
Oh,
that you so, you know.
Oh, no.
What's the best way to say it?
Eloquently presented
each and every day.
Yes.
It got better through the week. It got better through the week. Monday was terrible. Monday was awful. Tuesday, a little bit better.
Okay.
His best one was actually on Thursday. Thursday was his best one. Friday, he kind of fell back down to earth a little bit. Regressed to the mean, if you will.
Okay. I know that we've had episodes in the past where everybody's given it a good college try. But.
Yeah. I think the best guest, what up, H-Town, hey, how we doing, aside from me, was probably Joe on Thursday.
Really?
Probably
okay.
Joe on Thursday. Everybody else butchers it. Everybody else is brutal.
They really much do. I remember Josh Beard tried it. What's his name? Cole tried it.
Yeah, Cole was really bad.
Really, really bad.
Really, really bad.
Yep. No other way to describe that. Sorry, Cole, but it's true.
Sean, have you tried it yet? Have you tried the what up, H-Town, hey, how we doing?
No, I have not.
Would you like to?
Right now?
Yeah.
I don't know. This doesn't feel like it's right.
People,
I feel like I should be sitting in that chair.
Especially since you're sitting in front of the judge and the jury.
Because everyone else does it in front of just Jeremy.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to do it in front of Joel.
So, no. The answer is no.
No.
You don't want to give it a shot right now.
I won't do it until I'm actually one of the – I'm filling in for Joel
as
a Killer Bee.
Will you do it in the bullpen? You know, working on it in the bullpen a little bit?
Yeah.
I want to hear you practicing it during the week.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you should give it a shot. Anyways.
No, wait. What happened while I was gone, too? Because
with what?
Suddenly I'm starting to while I'm on vacation, I'm getting messages, oh, it's getting ugly. Oh, Jeremy and Cody. And Cody. I'm like, what?
Yeah, you want the backstory on
that?
Yeah. All right. So Cody was very – do I think – Joel, you've worked with me every day. You listen to me probably less than Cody listens to me. You certainly see less of my tweets than Cody sees of my tweets. Do you think
– I thought I see more of your tweets.
I bet you see less of my tweets than Cody does.
Really?
Cody lives in
my
mentions.
I'm not obsessed.
Cody
I just
lives
see him when,
in my mentions.
Okay.
Cody takes 2.5 minutes to respond to each and every one of my tweets. Do you think that I think 4 quarterbacks will be going in the top 10?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's a pretty known – It's a pretty known thing. I think 4 quarterbacks should be in the top 10.
End it there. I listen.
People screen grabbed to Cody that I believe 4 quarterbacks are going in the top 10. This was on Monday.
Uh-huh.
And then Monday evening, Cody wants to act fake tough guy and challenge me to a bet that 4 quarterbacks wouldn't go in the top 10. It's like, Cody, I think 4 quarterbacks are going in the top 10. That's
right.
A Bush League maneuver. So I challenged him, Cody, because he hates Will Levis, right? We know that he doesn't like Will Levis.
Correct.
So I counter-proposed to Cody that I bet you that Will Levis is a top 10 pick because I believe in Will Levis. I've talked good things about Will Levis. Cody, you don't. You don't believe in Will Levis. You've said bad things about Will Levis. So if he goes outside of the top 10, you win. If he goes in the top 10, I win. And the stakes were a $1,000 bet. And Cody, as you might imagine, did
backed
not.
Backed out.
He never even really addressed it.
It didn't materialize?
It scared him. It spooked
him.
So Cody had a Bush League offer. I countered with a real big man offer.
That is a very big man
and
offer.
Cody didn't want to take the bet. So,
wow.
Yeah, so Cody wants to play those games. I can play them right back.
Yeah,
Cody,
I got texted. It was getting
away.
Salty. You might have dropped a weasel.
I did. I said the Weasel House is next.
Oh, I love that. And I didn't get played for it. I love that.
I did say that was coming up.
Well played,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, I did say the Weasel House was coming.
Okay. There you go. I like it.
Anyways, Nick Caserio, not Cody Castuccio.
No.
Nick Caserio was talking a few minutes ago, his Monday press conference, which is just a bit away from the NFL draft. An NFL draft coming up a week from Thursday. Cannot wait for the NFL draft. So anyways, Nick Caserio was talking today. The big rumors are this whole shakeup, like Lombardo talked about it, that you know there might be a shakeup in the organization. Rumors have run rampant that Nick Caserio is going to be exiting Houston. He might be on his way to New England. Well, Nick Caserio talking earlier today, like he's not going to give you what the plans are at two, trading up, trading down, who they like, who they don't like. The biggest news coming from the press conference, Nick Caserio saying...
You know, before we take any questions, quite frankly, I'm almost embarrassed that I have to say anything. I mean, honestly, I feel like Leonardo DiCaprio in The Wolf of Wall Street. But I'm not leaving. There's never really been any substantive discussions of the sort. Grateful and appreciative of the opportunity that my family and I have here in Houston.
There you go. Nick Caserio has put... He's covered the fire with water. He has put out the fire. The rumors that Nick Caserio is going to be leaving the Houston Texans when the draft is over, Nick Caserio saying that's flat out false. It is not true. Nick Caserio is not going anywhere. Nick Caserio will still have employment with the Houston Texans.
Well, I mean, I was a little surprised when I saw that, but it also kind of made me think back to the kinder, gentler... First of all, let's not sell it short. When he did the whole Wolf of Wall Street thing, there's a lot of people that have considered him a lot of things, from the Wolf of Wall Street and others, when he thought he was the smartest person in the room at every press conference for the first year and a half. But I was wondering, because it just seemed like someone had put a muzzle on him and kind of pulled the reins back to where we got the kindler, gentler Nick in the last several months. But I didn't know if that was planned, if he was okay with it. So the rumor kind of made me think maybe there is a chance. But now that, you know, he cleared it up, I mean, I think it would be silly for him to try and depart early on a contract in which they were overwhelmingly, you know, very, very considerate in the way they took care of him. And there's a job still to do.
I never understood the logic from either side. Like, if you're the Houston Texans and you were so mad that Nick Caserio, like, didn't bench dudes in week 18 to where they couldn't draft Bryce Young, like, that's a move that you make immediately after the season whenever you fire Lovie Smith. It also is like, you know, if you're going to hire D'Amico Ryans, you want a general manager to take, you know, the first draft, blah, 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 blah. But from like a Nick Caserio point of view as well, like what is the motive of him wanting to leave? Like people are, well, you know, D'Amico Ryans is going to have the choice at number two and Nick Caserio doesn't like that. Okay, well, where is Nick Caserio going to go where all of a sudden he has executive power that he's making every decision? So while he might have lost control in Houston, and maybe he's like, this is a theory, I don't believe this to be the case, and he might be like, you know, bitter and unhappy that D'Amico Ryans is making the pick at two and Nick Caserio is not. Okay, well, where's Nick Caserio going to go to all of a sudden be making like these authoritative decisions? It does not exist. So I never really bought this. I never thought it was true from a Caserio point of view. Never thought it was true from a Houston Texans point of view. I think it's very smart for Nick Caserio to immediately address it before he took any questions. This is laughable. I'm not going anywhere. But Joe George had an interesting theory last week on the show that this doesn't dismiss. Joe has a theory, because the original rumor was that there's going to be things are going to be shaken up in the Houston Texans front office. Mm-hmm. Things are going to be kind of, you know, switched up and changed around, which maybe leads to a few scouts being dismissed. Maybe D'Amico has a few guys in mind. But Joe has a theory that Nick Caserio is going to get a promotion, that Nick Caserio is going to be bumped up to like president of football operations. And then D'Amico Ryans gets his general manager, an assistant GM in San Francisco, whoever it is. So this doesn't necessarily rule this out, where Nick Caserio gets the promotion. He just told you he's not going anywhere. Promotion means he's not going anywhere. But the shakeup of the organization isn't that Caserio's gone. It's that Caserio actually gets bumped up. Maybe he's not over the 53-man roster. He's no longer the general manager. And that's how they bring in D'Amico Ryan's guy. I still believe that that is possible. I still think that that's in play, even with Nick Caserio saying today he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, look, it's interesting. And, you know, we've heard all the different – look, San Francisco was kind of like the home of this Trent Baalke, Jim Harbaugh started out the whole thing where, you know, coaches always want their general manager, their guy. We knew that Belky when he moved on. We knew that the situation in Jacksonville when we got by Urban Meyer was the fact that Belky was, you know, a big problem and was kind of a drawback to coaches taking jobs. Coaches take jobs, and it's the same thing we'll have a conversation, I'm sure, at some point with the Rockets, too, where it's not just about the coaching position. It's the overall sanity and communication on a daily basis and, honestly, the power struggle that goes with it. It would be real interesting to me if they elevate Nick Caserio, because you and I have been as honest as anybody in this town over and over again about every single move and maneuver that Nick Caserio makes. If it's good, we compliment him. If it's bad, we call him out. Mm-hmm. But we keep that kind of running whiteboard that I keep in terms of checks and balances. Nothing has said to anyone in this town, overwhelmingly, Nick Caserio deserves a promotion. I understand, but he did say, when they were looking in the coaching search, look, if it means me stepping away, which was really weird and random at the time and made you think, but if it is in fact that he was willing to step away or step back for the right coach, maybe this was something that might have been in the works as well, and it is a possibility.
I think the step away thing, my theory of it at the time was that Nick Caserio, that was Nick Caserio's way of saying there's not one person that's more important than anybody else in this organization, that we operate as a whole, I'm just a spoke on the wheel. He actually even said that today in his press conference that, you know, there's not one person that's bigger than the entire organization. You're right. Like, we've been on the fence about Caserio. I think it's been very, like, an average job. The people that want him fired, like, why? Like, the first 2 years were about tearing everything down. I understand he has Lovey on his hands. I understand he has Cully on his hands. But the whole thing was to tear everything down. It wasn't necessarily to, like, be a winning football team in 2 years. But he's also hasn't been great. Like, if Nick Caserio left tomorrow, I'll take it or leave it. I'm indifferent. If he left tomorrow, okay, whatever. We'll move on. We'll survive. I'm not that like big of an advocate for Caserio, but I think it's kind of outrageous to like call for his head. I also think it's outrageous to be like, oh, yeah, this guy says around Thanksgiving that there's other things to be thankful for, and people are calling him a snake for saying something so normal. I found that to be very weird. You're right that he doesn't deserve a promotion, but it's promotion really only in title. Like, it's not necessarily a promotion in terms of, like, decision-making. Because I don't think Caserio would have say over the general manager. So, like, this is a promotion to where they don't sack Nick Caserio, but it's also to the point where D'Amico Ryans gets the general manager that he wants to get. It's not necessarily like, oh, Nick is doing such a great job, we're going to promote him. It's promoting him in title alone. That way they can get the general manager they really want.
But it's interesting because if you're promoted, you at least think that you still have a say-so, right? Whether it's the ultimate final say or not. I get it that every coach wants his GM, that every GM's going to want to have a say-so in personnel decisions, and everybody's going to want their piece of the pie in making those kinds of decisions. But I think it would be very rare that you have a guy that's promoted and then basically, for lack of a better term, neutered from being able to make any decisions.
Right.
Although what it does do is it saves face for both parties. It doesn't look like from the Texans' perspective it's a complete and utter misstep. And from Nick Caserio's perspective, it doesn't look like I screwed up so bad that they got rid of me way before my contract came up.
Yeah, I still think that's in play. I'm not going to say that's the definitive, that's what's going to happen, but I still think that's in play. And Nick Caserio saying that I'm not going anywhere doesn't change the fact that that could still be in play. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees are back at full strength. My name is Joe George. You can watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Let's get to some of the meat of this conversation from Nick Caserio. He talked about moving down. He talked about they've received offers for number two. They've talked to teams about the second pick of the NFL draft. Caserio staying. You good with that, Houston? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I'm not leaving.
I'm not leaving!
That was Nick Caserio to the Houston media moments ago, sort of. He said he felt like Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street, that these rumors people told him about and literally laughed at the idea of it. I called BS on it. We talked about it last week. I said I call BS on these rumors. I think Joe's plausible scenario where Nick gets the promotion and title alone. Does he deserve it? Absolutely not. But you're saving face for Nick. You're giving D'Amico his general manager. I think that that's still very much in play. Even if it's not, I do expect a reshuffle. Every front office has a reshuffle, especially with a new head coach. So maybe Nick Caserio lose half of his scouts and half of the scouts D'Amico Ryans like brings in. So I very much think that there's going to be a reshuffle. But Nick Caserio making it known today, he's going nowhere.
Here's the other thing that you have to consider about that too. As much as it aesthetically from the outside looking in, if something like that would happen, people would throw up a red flag and go, "That's not a good thing." It's actually a very good thing, because if you don't do it on the front side coming in, you have to do it on the back side, and it gets increasingly more ugly and more difficult to do, because now it's more public. There's more people affected. There's more bad blood. There's more rumors and things that come out on a daily basis or a situation by situation basis. And everybody's thinking that it's all in disarray and there's culture problems and all these other things. If you address it on the way in for D'Amico Ryans and just say, "Hey, look, I don't know you well enough to know if we'll get along or not. But I know that D'Amico, before he took the job, was very focused on making sure that he could trust and who he could trust within that organization and with the organization, to the standpoint of just saying, hey, look, in order for me to feel comfortable to do the best job I can do, these are some of the things that I need to have around me, or people that I need to have around me. If there's a way we can work this all out so amicably, get it done on the front side. Don't wait till it blows up on the backside."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I look, D'Amico deserves to have some of his, like, at very minimum, some scouts with the front office. Maybe even deserves to have that general manager, because we know a lot of times that there is alignment between GM and head coach. I'm curious your thoughts on this, too. Like, we talked about this last week in the whole I'm calling BS on this type of thing. It doesn't strike me like D'Amico, and we never know the whole story, but it doesn't strike me like D'Amico or Caserio have, like, this beef. It doesn't seem to me like they have, like, this misalignment between the two. One, I don't think D'Amico's a guy that's going to come in there and, like, just cut, like, fire everybody and have heads roll. He doesn't strike me as that type of guy. Plus, like, again, we don't know a whole lot, but whenever you hear D'Amico speak, when you hear Nick Caserio speak, and maybe they're fooling us, because people are great at being able to fool us whenever they speak behind a microphone, I don't get the feel like there's any tension there. I really do feel like they're working well together, and D'Amico's always been very complimentary of Nick, and Nick has always been very complimentary of D'Amico.
To that point, Jeremy, this is where I go back to what I said about guys that have had problems with general managers in the past.
Mm-hmm.
He's not taking the job if there isn't clarity with the general manager.
He would have gotten rid of him.
Right, exactly right.
Or he
would have said, him or me, yeah, or I have other opportunities.
Like Byron Leftwich, Jacksonville,
yes,
last
I
year.
Have other opportunities for other jobs in which I don't have to deal with this. So, you know, not trying to be a guy that tells you what to do, but if you want me and I don't like this guy and I don't trust this guy, I'm not signing up for the job. So it's that simple. We don't have to have a deal, and I can go somewhere else and you guys can keep your general manager. If there was issues with D'Amico and Nick, I think it would have been resolved before he took the job.
I think so, too. I think that's a great point. Anyways, some of the other things that Nick had to say, like in terms of the draft, and of course a general manager isn't going to tip their hand a whole lot when it comes to what they're planning on doing at number 2, planning on doing at 12, what players they love, what players they don't. So not a whole lot of what you could really take. Like, the storyline is he's staying. But he called the draft the coin. He goes, the draft isn't a coin flip, but it's a coin flip, which is something that I kind of always talk about. Like, the draft is very random. And we spend a lot of times talking about, like, the quarterback position for the Houston Texans. Rightfully so. Quarterback position is the most important position in the NFL. It's very much like the best player on an NBA team. Like, those are the two most important positions in American sports. I get it. But we talk a lot about the randomness of taking quarterback. Like, quarterbacks in the top 5, the hit rate on those guys. How many quarterbacks currently in the NFL that were drafted outside of the top 10? The greatest quarterback of all time being a 6th-rounder. Today, Jalen Hurts signed a contract that's going to make him the richest NFL football player of all time, was a 2nd-round pick. I agree with Caserio that a lot of times, like, you're trying to make the best decision you can. You're making your best guess on all of these players. But the NFL draft is very random. So I think Caserio is probably going to get criticized for calling the draft a coin flip, whereas I don't disagree with Nick Caserio.
It's not as big a crapshoot as the baseball, for sure, but as the NBA has become, where I always say, everybody now is not drafted on abilities. They're drafted on potential.
Right.
Potential can get you an extension. It can get you fired within a 2-year period, because you no longer are the drafts in the NBA where you get LeBron, D. Wade, Carmelo Anthony, and Chris Bosh in 4 of the top 5 picks. You're drafting guys hoping to God high school kids turn out to be, or college, you know, kids turn out to be the type of players that scouts and draft evaluators think that they're going to become. But until they play grown men on every single play, you just don't know. And so the more that I was keeping track of this from afar last week and kind of also getting national perspectives on this, there were two things that became very evident to me. More and more, as we always like to tell you, people are required to talk. They're not necessarily required to tell the truth. And all these people are setting up smoke screens and doing things that they need to do for the betterment of either them and their job, their teams, their agencies, the players themselves. And that's something that we just have to accept, that no one's going to be telling you the truth right now, no matter how much you desire it to be the case. So you have to kind of just set your expectations at a different level than all of a sudden assuming that, hey, you know, everybody's going to tell you exactly what they're thinking right now. And you know, leading up to the draft, there's no reason not to. There's every reason in the world not to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people lose sight of that when they're expecting everybody to just tell you exactly what they're thinking. But I go back to, on my second point, I go back to what I've said all along. If Casario truly believes that there is not a quarterback that he can get behind, that in his gut and his heart and his mind, that he doesn't believe there's one guy that he knows he has to have that he believes in, then take Will Anderson at two, or trade down, or do something else. Because you can fortify the rest of your roster and still be in the same spot a year from now, and maybe now with a different quarterback class, find a quarterback that you can hit your wagon to.
Yeah, like I agree, because I think a lot of times, Blankers, I get called kind of an anti-quarterback guy. Really, I'm a pro BPA guy. I understand that the Houston Texans need to find their quarterback in this DeMeco Ryans era to be a serious team in the NFL. Completely understand that. I agree with that. But if you're looking at this as like a five-year plan, because I think it probably should be for DeMeco Ryans, like you brought in DeMeco Ryans, we have a new energy around NRG, you have to be realistic of like building up to what you want eventually this organization to look like under DeMeco Ryans. So like, let's try to win a championship in 5 years. Let's try to put ourselves in the best position to be a champion in five seasons. So if that's the goal, if that's the plan, if that's the path to being a championship contender in 5 years, 2027, let's call it, you don't need the quarterback immediately. You don't need it right now. You don't need it this second.
It's more vital and essential you get the right one, right? Because the last thing that you can afford to do is swing and miss.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as you feel the pressure and know this is a quarterback-laden draft and feel like you have to get a guy, if you don't believe in that guy and then that guy doesn't succeed, it literally takes you off whatever beaten path that you've been following to try and stick to the script and get where you need to go by 2027 or whenever it is. And it actually takes you back years to where now you're either going to grossly overpay or overtrade for a quarterback. And we've seen Indianapolis try
about
and do
the Jets,
this, right?
Or the Jets. Like the Jets, I think, are a good model for the Texans. Like build a team around really good young players. You're able to like rise the overall talent of the team. They felt like they had to draft quarterback. They felt like they were being held hostage to take a quarterback. They took Zach Wilson, and fast forward a couple of years, they stand now in a spot where they're having to give in to all of Green Bay's demands for a quarterback to push them over the top. Like I look at the Jets as a model for the
and
Texans.
That's a two-year
like,
window,
what can go
because
wrong?
What happens when Rodgers leaves?
Yeah, they're going to have to groom Zach Wilson or find another quarterback.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And so from that perspective, or you look at the Colts, say, hey, I built the rest of my roster with good young talent. I started from the trenches. I built the foundation. I got guys on offense and defense. Then I started putting receivers and running backs in place. I have everything that I need, but now the one position that I need, I haven't been able to fill. So now I'm grasping at straws, trading for veterans that are on the complete downside. And now I'm sitting there going, well, I'm at four. Do I take a quarterback that's going to be a rookie that's going to have to really play his ass off right off the top to keep this young roster going in the right direction? Or do I look at Lamar Jackson again and go, am I once again going to mortgage more of my draft capital to try and take another swing and hopefully not a miss this time at another veteran?
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Casario also talked about that number two pick. He says, we're open to listening. He said he's received calls about the number two pick. What is more likely that the Texans do on Thursday, April 27th, a week from this Thursday? Is it more likely they trade down from 2 or up from 12? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
ESPN 97.5 is your home for the best draft coverage in the city. The Will House will be live from the draft in Kansas City, and we'll be partying. We'll be partying live and local at Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage on the Southwest Freeway from 6 to 11 p.m. When you arrive at our draft party, make sure you sign up for our mock draft contest. You can qualify to win a 55-inch TV courtesy of Audio Visual Consultations. Our entire NFL draft coverage is presented by 1800 Tequila, the official tequila of the Houston Texans. So you win this mock draft contest, you're winning a 55-inch TV. You do have to be there to be eligible to win. So make sure you swing on by. You hang out with us on April 27th, draft night, for our special draft show. And you have the opportunity, because ESPN 97.5 loves to give back. We love to give back to the U, especially the Hive. I hope a Hiver wins this thing. But a 55-inch TV is on the line. Special thanks to Audio Visual Consultations for making all of that possible. Cannot wait.
Maybe someone could put that up as bet capital between you and Cody, so he doesn't have to cover the grand.
I don't think Cody wants any.
He wants no part of you.
Cody wants nothing to do with Branham. Let's be honest. He wants nothing to do with Branham,
unless it's wrestling.
That's why he suggested his bet where he knew which side I was on. It was a Bush League move, to be quite honest with you. The Texans have pick number 2. The Texans have pick number 12. Nick Caserio says today that we're open to listening. He said he's received calls about the number 2 pick. He says he's not doing his job if he doesn't take those calls, which is totally true. You should be listening to everything. What if somebody offers you a stupid trade? You got to be ready to attack. What is more, let's phrase this in two different ways, two different angles. Let's attack this. First off, let's look at it from a Houston Texans point of view. Not what we want. Let's eliminate our desires for a second. But from a Houston Texan point of view, what is more likely, and we'll ask this to the Hive as well, 713-780-3776, what is more likely? That they trade down from 2 or up from 12. From a Texans point of view, Nick Caserio on draft day.
I think it's more likely they trade down from 2.
Really?
I do.
See, I'm on the other side of this. I'm curious why you think this.
Well, because I think that Nick understands that if he's not going to take a quarterback at 2, then he's going to face a world of pressure. That I think that depending on what he gets for it, if he gets a haul, he can say, hey, look, my built-in excuse is we need so many different players at so many different positions, and we weren't sold on one of the top quarterbacks like other teams were. We just figured we had to cash in one more time to get all this extra draft capital that hopefully speeds up our rebuild. And then they could even consider trading up later in the draft or in other spots in the draft once they got that haul. But I think that it would just be focused on if they really truly don't believe in one of these top-tier quarterbacks and don't want the smoke of not taking one, whichever one is left for you at 2.
You don't think he'll just take a defensive end, though, whether it's Will Anderson or Tyree Wilson?
It depends on their draft board. It depends on if head and shoulders Will Anderson is so far above anybody else that you can say, I can't pass on him. Or it depends on where you end up trading back to in the draft for whoever wants to move up to 2.
Are those your personal feelings, too, that you rather trade down from 2 than up from 12? Because my personal feelings...
I would rather trade up from 12 because I believe you're going to get... Okay. You're going to get a franchise-level player at a different position at 2. If it's Will Anderson, you got a pass rusher that you haven't had.
And now you're trading up, and you're probably finding 2 franchise cornerstones.
Right.
Yeah. See, I'm actually on the opposite end.
Well, because didn't I see someone say that one of the scenarios was you end up with Jackson Smith and Jigba and Will Anderson. Are you okay with that?
I don't love Smith and Jigba.
I know you
12,
don't. But I'm saying, just for the hypothetical of saying you got 2 franchise caliber players at 2 different positions,
it just wasn't
quarterback.
I wouldn't be okay with that. Okay. I get this anti-quarterback label. I want to leave the first round with a quarterback. If the Texans don't have a quarterback in the fold that they've drafted in the first round on Thursday, April 27th, it's going to have a bitter taste in my mouth. I just don't need it to be at number 2. I'm personally of the belief that the Texans are more likely to trade up from 12 back into the top 7. Because I think that it's very likely that they go BPA, defensive player at 2, trade back into the top 7, and get Will Levis or Anthony Richardson. I believe that the Texans will do that. I'm actually more of the idea. For me personally, I like the idea of trading down. If you can collect tons of draft capital, we're hearing more and more that the top of this NFL draft isn't like elite outside of maybe Bryce Young. If somebody falls in love with Anthony Richardson and they're full selfish enough to do that, okay, play along. Like, let them fall in love with Anthony Richardson and get a huge offer for a quarterback that I think is going to be a bust. And depending on who that team is, you might be looking at a situation where you've added a future first rounder, you still have a pick in the top 10, you still have pick number 12. So from my point of view, I'd rather trade down from 2 than up from 12. But I think the Texans are actually more likely to do the opposite. When they stick and pick at 2, and then they're in love with another player, maybe quarterback, and they trade into the top 7 to take that quarterback.
I just think that the other thing that you've got to be really cognizant of, because look, if you can get a haul like the Bears got, with as bad as your roster's been, you have to consider that.
Absolutely.
You have to think that that is an absolute win for you.
And again, what's the plan? Is it a 5-year plan, or is it we must have a quarterback immediately in 2023?
And on top of that, what have we been saying? You can't just get a franchise quarterback that's good. You've got to get a quarterback in the AFC that can at least hold their own with all these great young quarterbacks in the AFC that aren't going anywhere that you have to compete with. So you can't go out and get the next Dak Prescott or Derek Carr. You've got to be able to say that I'm not only getting a franchise quarterback, I'm getting a guy that can play.
Yeah, and if you have doubts, like reports say, with Stroud, with Levis, with Richardson, there shouldn't be a reach there. Now,
no.
If you want to take your shot because you traded down and now you have an extra draft pick, okay, that makes sense to me.
But also be willing to reset the deck next year and say, hey, no matter who we took, if Caleb Williams is sitting right there for us, we got
to
take it.
That's my thing. Like, you shouldn't be held hostage to do anything. Like, you need to be doing what is best in the organization. Because people that are pro quarterback at 2, no matter what, they're like, well, you got to get people, you got to people in the stands. You got to sell merch. You got to sell tickets. If it's a 5-year plan and your priority is to win, you don't have to do that if you have doubts about said quarterbacks. Josh in Beaumont, I don't think Nick should be taking calls or talking to the media about trading 2 until everyone knows what Arizona is doing. He needs Arizona to trade out first so he can get maximum value for the pick. I don't necessarily disagree with the logic, but I don't think Arizona is going to trade that pick until they're on the clock. Mm-hmm. I think they'd be foolish to trade that pick prior to them being on the clock.
Because you got to see who's left and then know the demand because of it.
If it's Anthony Richardson that people are trying to trade up to number 3-4 because they love all of the athletic measurements of Anthony Richardson, all of a sudden that price goes down if he's for some reason selected at number 2. So I don't think that there's any chance Arizona trades the number 3 pick before they're on the clock. Now, they're probably going to have offers already ready to be made and deals ready to be done the moment they come on the clock if player A is available, if player B is available. They'll have done their due diligence. I don't see any possibility that Arizona trades the number 3 pick before they're on the clock next
year. I agree with that. And I think getting back to the other point, too, about if you take a quarterback 2 years in a row, depending on where you take a quarterback this year, but then if you have the number 1 pick next year, and or even if it's not the number 1 pick, but you have the opportunity to take one of the top quarterbacks next year, people forget very quickly. As much as they remember what you did in this year's draft and if you didn't take a quarterback at 2, people forgot about Josh Rosen real quick when they got Kyler Murray. Because, sure, it was a little bit painful in the early going to say, well, we just gave up a first-round pick because we wasted it on a quarterback. We couldn't even recoup half of that to get rid of him and get him out of town. But you know what? You got your guy. And because you got your guy, and now they're finding out maybe he wasn't quite the guy they thought they were getting, but for a good period of time, no one even cared about Josh Rosen anymore because you got the right guy. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to. If you end up with Caleb Williams next year, or you end up with the kid from Carolina, you end up with a guy that everybody's going to go, you know what? They did the right thing.
But I think everybody's going to hear you say what you just said and say say trade 2 and 12 for Bryce, though. Because, like, what you said, like, I understand that you're looking at next year's draft class and it makes total sense, but what you said could also be used as an argument of why you would just couple 2 and 12 and trade up a spot to make sure you get your guy.
That is so much to give up for one spot.
But you get your guy.
But yet you still don't know if he's going to be the guy because you don't know how he's going to play. You hear all these things, but we know all the question marks. So you go and move one spot, but give up the chance to add 2 positional players that are going to be with you for the long haul, whether they're, you know, they're living up to their full potential and they're just dominant or not. They're going to be really good players, assuming that, you know, 2 and 12, that high. I can't give up 2 picks in the first round in the top 12 to move up one spot. I just think it's way too much.
I wouldn't do it either. I think it's very unlikely that they do. Like we just said, it's more likely the Texans trade down from 2, up from 12. We didn't even kick around the idea of trading up from number 2. I think it'd be the last option.
I agree. I don't think they love anybody at quarterback in this draft enough to do that.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. The Astros dropped the series to the Texas Rangers. That one stung a little bit, I believe, more than these other series losses. The good, the bad, and the ugly from the Astros weekend set against the Texas Rangers. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Not Santa's asking. He says, I can't wait to hear Joel berate Branham on his Who Said It performance from Friday. Yeah, it wasn't great. I was over.
No berating. You were very, very bitter, though.
Yeah, I was. I wasn't happy. I mean, it was over 5. And you, I was.
No, I get that, but I mean, you know, you were. It was almost like you were taking it out on me, and I was like, "Look, I wasn't trying to say anything to you. I was just playing remotely because it was fun listening as I was driving around in the car."
Yeah, it wasn't a great performance. Who said it? Whoever's participated the last 2 weeks, 0-10. You've missed the last two Fridays. I missed the two Fridays ago.
I got two in the car.
You got two in the car. Yep. Yeah, I got to know my role. I'm going to have to defer. I'm going to have to be a pass first point guard on Who Said It, unless I'm just streaky that day, unless I'm just feeling it that day.
But then when I let you go and it works out, then you just kind of you go overzealous on the self-love.
Well, of course I do.
I know you do.
It wouldn't be any fun if I did not. People on Twitch are saying, did Branham get his HGA or HGH takes or whatever, injections? I wish. I would take
HGH. It's only because they listen during commercial breaks to stuff that doesn't go on over the air.
I think you can see it on the Twitch.
I think it's because during the commercial, you told me what was going on.
I'm not sure I did.
And I think that's where they got it from. I
had a physical and took an x-ray on my buttocks earlier today to see if I have a crack in
the hip. I would have said lower back. For the sake of the listeners, I mean,
it's in the buttocks.
I mean, it sounds like you're a pain in the ass. Or you have one.
It wouldn't be the worst thing I've been called. Joe George, the Killer Bees.
Speaking of pains in the ass, hi, Joe.
Are back intact.
What's up, guys?
The entire group is here. Of the Killer Bees.
Is that gel in your hair?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
When was the last time you used gel in your hair?
1980. No.
I went to a wedding and I put gel in my hair.
Was it mine?
2 months ago.
Oh, no. Wasn't mine.
3 months ago.
Cool. I like it. The Astros got beat by the Rangers, 2 out of 3. They got pounded yesterday, 9-1. A very, very bad seventh inning. The good, the bad, the ugly with the Houston Astros over the weekend. Where do we want to start? Do we want to be negative? Do we want to be positive? Do we want to be neutral? Do we want to start with the good, the bad, or the ugly? Joe George, you call. You haven't made a decision yet today.
Good.
All right, let's start with the good. Let's be positive about the Houston Astros. We'll start with the positivity that it are the 7-9 Astros, fourth place in the American League West. What was the good from the series for the Astros, Blankers?
Well, I mean, I would say that seeing what you got out of Hunter Brown in the first six innings of Framber Valdez has to at least make you feel pretty good that the starting pitching is still going to be okay like we thought, that there was a lot of panic being kicked around early in the season and unrealistic people even on our airwaves on other shows expecting starting pitchers in their first start or two to go 8-9 innings, and it's just not what happens in baseball. But to see that your starters can get you 6-plus innings of quality work is exactly what you want out of them, and that's moving on from a Cy Young Award winner in Verlander. I think that's a good in itself as much as anything, is your starting pitching is going to be fine.
Yeah. My in that same vein, the good for me was Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown on Saturday was phenomenal, mm-hmm. and he had that rough third inning where things could have gotten haywire quick. Like, that could have very easily been an inning where Framber had yesterday in the seventh, where there's an error, there's some bleeders, there's some ball that sneaked through the infield, some seeing eye singles, and Hunter Brown got out of that inning with two unearned runs.
He pitched his tail off to get out of that.
I'm in love with this dude.
Yeah.
I really like the moxie and the makeup of Hunter Brown. We knew the stuff, but the moxie and the makeup, I love it.
Think about how much we almost overvalue Maldi because of what he has to do as a psychiatrist when the pitchers are on the mound. The fact that Hunter Brown just tightened up his cleats a little bit and said, you know what? I don't care who got me into this. I'll get me out of this. And you could tell when he let all that emotion out when he came off the hill, and everybody should have been standing and applauding him too, because he did what a lot of our pitchers have a hard time sometimes doing, which is kind of just righting the ship by getting their thoughts straight and going out and doing what they were paid to do. He did that. He deserved to be able to unload the tank and celebrate what he did, and it was a hell of a performance.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Hunter Brown. He's looked really good through three starts, 2-0 record, a sub 2 ERA. Like, his first start, people looked at his first start like, uh-oh, is this Hunter Brown guy that good? Where if you really dove into that start, he was getting nickel and dime, like little bleeders, the infield singles, things like that. He's been really good. And the command for Hunter Brown, which is like the one thing you're looking at for Brown to see if he's like good in that spot, because there's been a lot of thoughts that his command's not going to be good enough to be a big league starter. He's got 6 walks and 18 2/3. Yeah. Like, his command is plenty good. If you even want to throw last year's Major League Baseball numbers into it, he's thrown 39 big league innings in 2 years. He's walked 13 guys.
His only earned runs came against the Tigers, right?
It's so weird.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's done everything you could have possibly asked him to do, and he's just getting started. That's why, you know, again, to hear people criticize the starting pitchers, look, I mean, everybody's going to have some growing pains, getting the arm stretched out, getting feel, you know, into their comfort zone in the way they throw the baseball. But it could have been 10 times worse with the offense struggling the way it has. The pitchers have kept them in the game.
Love what I've seen from Hunter Brown. What is your good from the good, the bad, and the ugly in this 3-game series against the Rangers, Joe George?
Mauricio Dubon, 11-game hit streak. It's still going. I mean, he...
Leadoff man, Mauricio Dubon.
Base running a little bit.
It's like, oh, you know, the base running's been...
He was safe, though. Like, people were
out.
I know. Well, he was...
Upon review, he was out.
Right. I understand. But he was out on the overslide. He wasn't out
right,
on...
Like, right, he beat it originally.
Like, Carl Ravitch says, you've got to be sure on that play. Well, he beat the tag. He just slid
just
through the bag.
Stay on the bag.
So he was sure. He just slid through the base. Not ideal.
So,
but he's been great with the stick.
I would say Dubon. I mean, look, it's just of all the bad that's happened in terms of injuries, it's been a huge bright spot for the team. And Yordan Alvarez just keeps crushing baseballs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that dude is just...
He's one of the best hitters in baseball.
No.
He's in the top tier of baseball.
I think your statement is factually incorrect.
You think he's the best?
I think he's the best.
The best hitter in baseball.
That's tough to put him in the very best category.
I got a couple in mind that say Trout, that he's in the top five.
Judge?
But who'd you say?
Judge? I don't know. Judge?
I think Ramirez with the Guardians.
Ramirez
really
might
good.
Not have the power. Like, he's got good power.
Well,
he doesn't
clutch,
have elite
got,
power. I love Jose Ramirez.
Boy, he's so good in the zone. He knows his zone. He can go the other way. He's such a good hitter.
Yeah, Acuña's really good. But, I mean, it's hard not to have Aaron Judge on that list.
They're there. Let's be honest.
The only reason why we don't is we hate the Yankees.
Exactly. If Aaron Judge...
That's just on the table for everybody to see in here. The only reason why you don't put Aaron Judge in that category is because he's a Yankee.
I'm not ready to say he's the best hitter in baseball. I absolutely will give you that he is in the top tier of hitters in Major League Baseball.
I think Yordan and Aaron Judge are right there at the top.
Yeah, I think Ramirez is probably close to that conversation. Mike Trout definitely
is. Yeah, I mean, when Trout's healthy, it probably is Trout.
Acuña, when he's healthy, probably is in that conversation, too.
I think you're right.
Julio Rodriguez might eventually be in that conversation as well. That dude's a stud.
He is, but, I mean, he's got a lot to learn on the zone and you know, just pitch discipline sometimes.
I haven't seen how he's doing this year. I probably should have looked
but
that up first.
I think he's a ways off.
239 average, sub 300 on base.
I mean, if we look at the minor leagues, I mean, maybe it'll be Fernando Tatis.
Boy, he's killing it right now in the minor leagues.
He's beating those guys up.
Being out
like,
in California and
it's like they're high school pitchers.
They get Padres, Dodgers, and Angels games. And I was watching – Padres were playing the Brewers, ironically. And, they just couldn't – the countdown to bringing him back – and I'm not sure the clubhouse feels this way – but the countdown from the announcers of the Padres bringing back Tatis Jr. with the way he's ripping the cover off. He had 2 home runs in a game the night that I was watching, and they just can't wait to get him back.
Yeah, he's pretty good. All right, let's get to the bad. The good, the bad, and the ugly from the Astros weekend series against the Rangers in which they dropped 2 of 3. What is your bad, Blankers?
I just think the bad overall, because I'm torn between bad and ugly, but I'll go bad offensive, just the overall offensive production. And I know 2 guys that are big bats are out of the lineup, but I just think that, you know, as much as we thought Abreu was going to be this guy to hit for average and do things offensively, it hasn't been there. Bregman has gotten off to another slow start. For as much as you capitalize on what you weren't expecting to get out of Dubon that you're getting, the rest of the lineup just hasn't been able to pick up the slack and do what they needed to do to keep this ship more than afloat, but really going, you know, on staying the course and being able to tread water. I think the offense has been bad, and that's one thing I didn't expect, even though we knew that 7-8-9 was probably going to be a little weaker than it would be in, say, July, August, September. Overall, the offense, aside from Yordan and a little of Tucker, it hasn't been great.
Your 7-8-9's actually been all right.
Yeah.
Like, Mauricio Dubon was, like, in that 7-8-9. We didn't even want him to be an everyday starter. We said 40% starts at second base, and all of a sudden he's been good. Chaz has been good.
It's unfortunate Chaz gets moved to the leadoff, and he's doing everything, again, that is asked of him, And then whatever's going on with his vision keeps him out.
Hopefully he's back. I don't think it's serious. Otherwise, I think he would have already landed on the IL. I think they would have already made a roster.
But it's so weird.
It is weird. Yeah. Hopefully we see him in the lineup tonight.
I don't care what he hasn't been seeing. He's been seeing the baseball well enough to hit very well. Yeah. Keep him hitting.
My bad is, and again, similar vein, Jose Abreu. I tweeted this out last week. Is it too early to be concerned about Jose Abreu? And it is still. I mean, you're a tenth of the way through the year. Evan Gaddis responded to my Twitter at Jeremy Brandon and said, no, it's too early to really, you know, be looking at Abreu. But Abreu, this year, I know he started the season on a whatever game hitting streak and he reached base safely in his first 10. He's got a .239 average, a .282 on base, and his on-base percentage is better than his slugging. He's got a .550 OPS. And if you look at his baseball savant numbers, which, like, what's his exit velocity? How often is he hitting the ball hard? Brutal. Like, they're cold. They're blue. They're all blue. So I do
Here's
not
where we
like
fire up the masses. You know who could have done that?
Yuli Gurriel.
And you know what he would have done that Abreu didn't do? He would have come up with some of those baseballs that caused errors to create base runners to cause problems.
He's hitting 300
at first base.
Yeah, 30 at bats, something like that for Yuli.
It's weird because the last 5 days I've been like Jose Abreu's like biggest defender. That he starts slow, but Jesus, dude.
Like, why did he start slow though? Like, I get if it was cold weather.
I threw out that theory on Saturday. Like, it's like how many of these games that he was starting slower in Chicago and Minnesota?
Yep.
And now it's like it was weird hearing Dusty Baker say after the game, like he reached out to the people in Chicago and they said that he's a notorious slow starter, and he is. Like, if you look at it, you can Google it and you see articles from like 4 of the last 6 years that he's a slow starter. But the hard contact or the lack of it is frightening.
I'm telling you.
And the swings are ugly.
And then on top of that, like I said, what makes it worse is the defense. Because you knew one thing you were going to get from Yuli that was going to save a boatload of runs was the scoops and the defense. Exactly. And you're not getting that from Abreu.
No, he's not bailing out Pena, that's for sure. Pena hadn't been great either. George.
No, that's what I was going to say. Wait till we get to ugly.
What's your bad Joe George?
I was going to go defense, just in general.
Just in general.
They're not playing great defense on the infield right now. Mm-mm. And I thought Pena last year was a tick bit overrated in terms of his defense. And I thought Yuli Gurriel bailed him out a lot. And the one thing was, like, when you watch in the past Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu, like, there are plays that Tim Anderson would, you know, make great plays, but they were just kind of bad throws and it might not go well. And it was, is it Anderson or is it Abreu?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're seeing that same conversation now of where Pena makes a throw and in the past, we would see it get, you know, picked by Yuli, and Abreu is just not having that same success. So I think the defense in general has just been poor for the Astros, and that's unusual.
713-780-ESPN. What is your good? What is your bad? What is your ugly from the Astros dropping a series to the Texas Rangers over the weekend at Minute Maid Park? 713-780-3776. Also, our ugly from that series. Got to ask you the question, too. What's your DH pecking order right now with Michael Brantley out? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.